Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today, we'll read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We'll read from chapter 9, entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge, verse 14. Satatam kirtiyanto ma, yatantascha judha brata. Namasyantas chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, bowing down, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. His symptoms are described here. A Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. He has no other business. He's always engaged in the glorification of the Lord. In other words, he is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising His holy name, His eternal form, His transcendental qualities, and His uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these things. Therefore, a Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is attached to the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord, the Brahma Jyoti, is not described as Mahatma in the Bhagavad Gita. He is described in a different way in the next verse. The Mahatma is always engaged in different activities of devotional service, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting about Vishnu, not a demigod or a human being. That is devotion. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu and Smaranam, remembering Him. Such a Mahatma has firm determination to achieve at the ultimate end the association of the Supreme Lord in any one of the five transcendental rasas. To achieve that success, he engages all activities, mental, bodily, and vocal, everything in the service of the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna. That is called full Krishna consciousness. In devotional service, there are certain activities which are called determined, such as fasting on certain days, like the 11th day of the moon, Ekadasi, and on the appearance day of the Lord. All these rules and regulations are offered by the great acharyas for those who are actually interested in getting admission into the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the transcendental world. The Mahatmas, great souls, strictly observe all these rules and regulations, and therefore they're sure to achieve the desired result. As described in the second verse of this chapter, not only is this devotional service easy, but it can be performed in a happy mood. One does not need to undergo any severe penance and austerity. He can live this life in devotional service, guided by an expert spiritual master, and in any position, either as a householder, or a sannyasi, or a brahmachari. In any position, and anywhere in the world, he can perform this devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus become actually Mahatma, a great soul. Satatam kirtiyanto ma, yatantascha judha vrata, Namasyantas chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Om jnana tamilandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshura militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadam tikam. Anjikalpa tarubhyas cha kripa sindubhyeva cha paditanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is a very nice verse, very important verse in Bhagavad Gita. Here, Lord Krishna is describing some of the symptoms, main symptoms of the Mahatmas, the very elevated, advanced, pure devotees of the Supreme Lord. There are many forms. There are many forms of the Lord. Actually, there are so many forms. In Srimad Bhagavatam it's described, they are innumerable, just like if you try to count the number of waves in an ocean. There's no real possibility of counting that number. So, similarly, there are so many incarnations of the Lord, so many forms of the Lord, that you can't count them, just like the waves in the ocean, but even more. Even though the number of waves in the ocean is very, very large, we can't count it, it's so large, but still we know that it is finite. It's not that actually there is a literally unlimited number. Maybe it's many billions or trillions or some very, very vast number, but it is finite. However, the incarnations of the Lord, the number of avatars or different forms and expansions of the Lord, they're actually infinite. Not just millions or billions or trillions, some very big number. Not just that, but actually they're unlimited. And each one of those forms of the Lord has his particular group of devotees, personal associates. Just like here we have on our altar, Shishi Radha Krishna, Shishi Radha Radhana. So, Lord Krishna, of course Lord Krishna is the original form of the Absolute Truth, the original Swayam Bhagavan, original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he has his circle of associates, devotees, very vast, very large. And then there are other forms, and they also have their circles of devotees. Just like Lord Ram, just the other day on Wednesday and last Sunday, we were celebrating the appearance of Lord Ram. So Lord Ram, he's one of these forms of the Lord, expansions of Lord Krishna actually. And Lord Ram, he has his special associates, his special circle of devotees. And of course, I'm sure you all know, some number of them, you would know their names. When we think of Lord Ram, which particular associate of his comes to mind first? Any one of you? Who do you think of when you... Ah, Roshan is suggesting Hanuman. Yes, when we think of Lord Ram, automatically we think of Hanuman. And also, at least if we're understanding things correctly, whenever we whenever we hear of Hanuman, we think of Lord Ram. The two are linked. They're linked up so very closely, unbreakably linked, inseparable associates. So, we were celebrating the appearance of Lord Ram just a few days ago, and as fate would have it, or by Krishna's arrangement, or perhaps Lord Ram's arrangement, tomorrow, you know what today it is tomorrow? Hanuman Jayanti. The appearance day of Hanuman. Very auspicious. So we'll be having a program here tomorrow night after, I guess, about 6 o'clock or so going into the evening. And I don't know if you've been invited yet, but this is an invitation. You can all come along and we'll all glorify Hanuman. As a devotee of Ram, that is actually the correct picture, the correct understanding of Hanuman. Not that he's some independent deity and he does his own thing and we can just worship him and we don't need to worry about anyone else, even Lord Ram, but he is great devotee, Lord Ram. In principle, just like with Srimati Radharani, Srimati Radharani is such a great personality. We worship Srimati Radharani, but we never worship her separate from Krishna. Shishi Radha Krishna. Srimati Radharani will never be separate from Lord Krishna. They're inextricably, inseparably linked together. So similarly, Hanuman, we shouldn't think that, oh, we can worship him independent of Ram. But we should understand that he's always connected with Ram. So whenever we think of him, we should think of his association with Ram. Then he'll be pleased. So tomorrow is the appearance day of Sri Hanumanji, very auspicious occasion. So I thought we could perhaps mention one or two little pastimes of Hanuman and perhaps make a few comments if there's time. Hanuman, his appearance is very extraordinary. His actual birth, very, very extraordinary. You may know that Hanuman is known as the son or expansion even of Lord Shiva. He's also known as the son of Vayu. So he's known in these two ways. Sounds a little unusual. He's the son or expansion of two people at the same time. But that's explained actually in Valmiki Ramayana. When we speak of Ramayana, the bona fide, authorized Ramayana, which is a Vedic scripture, that is Valmiki Ramayana. Tulsidas's Ramayana, and there are other versions and other sorts of accounts of different pastimes of Lord Ram and Hanuman. They're not actually within the category of Vedic scriptures, but Valmiki Ramayana, that is part of the Itihasa section of the Vedas, or the Vedic scriptures. So Hanuman, well, initially, Lord Shiva and Parvati, one day, of course, they're always associating together as husband and wife. They're eternal associates, actually. So, one time they were associating together and they saw one monkey, very attractive looking monkey, very extraordinary looking monkey. And they became quite captivated seeing that monkey. In fact, they became so captivated that both of them suddenly got a very strong feeling, overwhelming desire, that let's become monkeys. Let's assume the forms of monkeys ourselves. So, of course, they have all mystic powers, so they were able to do that. They did that. Suddenly they were manifest in the form of a male and female monkey. And they were associating together very happily as monkeys enjoying in that sort of way. And as they were associating together, they became attracted to each other. And as a result, of their combination, actually, in those monkey forms, then a baby monkey was to be born from them. So then they changed themselves back into their normal forms, human-like, demigod and demigoddess forms. And then Parvati remembered what had happened, that actually she was now pregnant. She was going to give birth to a monkey, a baby monkey. So she became very upset. Actually, she said, among other things, she said, I've already got one son who's an elephant. So to have another one who's a monkey, I think that would be too much. I don't know if I could take it. So she appealed to Lord Shiva, please do something to relieve me of this. Very extraordinary situation I'm in. So Lord Shiva, he didn't know what to do. He was quite in a quandary, and Parvati was very disturbed. Then who should come on the scene but Vayu, the god of the winds? So Lord Shiva appealed to Vayu, that you please take this embryo which is in my wife's womb. It's actually a monkey embryo. So you please take it, and you give birth. He actually wanted Vayu to act as a mother, in fact. And you deal with this baby monkey of ours. So through their mystic powers, they managed to exchange or place that little embryo, little fetus of a monkey within Vayu, the god of the wind. Very extraordinary thing. So Vayu was then carrying on with his duties, and then the extraordinary nature of what had happened was becoming more and more apparent in his mind. And he was thinking, how can I do this? I can't become a mother of a monkey. I'm Vayu. I'm a demigod. I'm one of the important demigods. So this is too strange. But he didn't know what to do, because he'd accepted that, and that fetus was within him. So he went to the Sapta Rishis, the seven great universal sages, and he appealed to them that you please relieve me of this extraordinary, very strange situation I'm in. So the sages, they considered what to do. They didn't really know what to do. But then they said, oh yes, you know what has happened? One maidservant of Brihaspati, her name is Anjana, she's just been cursed to become a monkey. That in itself is a long story I won't go into, but she was cursed to become a monkey. So she's gone now to join a community of celestial monkeys at Kishkinda. She's now the queen of the chief of the celestial monkeys. His name is Ketari. So if you go there, then you can place this fetus in her womb, and then that'll be a very suitable situation for this little baby monkey to be born in. So Vayu went there, and invisibly, he actually impregnated this female monkey, who was actually a maidservant of Brihaspati, Anjana. And he placed this fetus within her womb. And then she gave birth. She gave birth, actually, to Hanuman in Kishkinda. Therefore, Hanuman's known as a child of Shiva, or an expansion even of Shiva directly from his body. Also a child or expansion of Vayu. So Hanuman was there. Hanuman took birth. And of course, being an expansion of Shiva, he was extremely powerful. Very, very extraordinary child. And the mother, Anjana, she was quite astonished at my little baby. He didn't have the name Hanuman at the time. He was called Anjaneya. That my little baby, he's the most extraordinary little monkey I've never seen. anyone like him before. One day, Hanuman, this story you may know, were many of you familiar with this, what I just explained now? Many of you? Were you? Oh, you were. You weren't? I see. So anyway, Hanuman, Anjaneya he was known then, he asked Anjana, "What can I eat? What should I eat?" And Anjana said, "Oh, you should eat fruit. Eat fruit." And he asked, "Well, what fruit?" She said, "Well, fruit which is very red and effulgent, like the sun. Fruit that looks like the sun." So Hanuman, because he's so powerful, he then decided, "Well, if I should eat fruit that's like the sun, why don't I just go and eat the sun?" So he went flying off and he grabbed the sun and he then started compressing the sun, made it very small till it got to the size where he could just pop it into his mouth. And he was just about to pop it into his mouth when who should come on the scene but, anyone know who came on the scene? Rahu. You know Rahu? Rahu causes eclipses. He comes and tries to consume the moon, or consume the sun. And we understand that this is actually what causes eclipses. So Rahu, seeing that the sun had been compressed to such a convenient size, and himself being very powerful and thinking that this little baby monkey, what can he do? He can't protect himself from me. So he went and challenged Hanuman that I want to eat the sun, so you give me the sun. But Hanuman, like a playful little child, he said, "What? No, I'm not going to give you the sun." He said, you come here and I'll eat you too." So he grabbed Rahu and he stuck Rahu into his mouth. And then he put the sun in his mouth and closed his mouth. He was holding them within his mouth. He didn't actually consume them. But he was thinking, "Okay, now I'm going to eat these two things. So I'm going to go home and I'll eat them at home in Kishkinda." But then, as soon as he put the sun within his mouth and closed his mouth, the whole universe became dark. Completely enveloped in darkness. So, all the demigods were there. Indra and all the administrative demigods. Suddenly they were in complete pitch darkness. And they got into great anxiety. What on earth has happened? So Indra said, "I'll go and find out. I'll investigate." So Indra, he went flying off on Airavata. Airavata is the elephant of Lord Indra. He has four tusks and he's a very majestic celestial elephant. So Indra went flying off on Airavata and they were looking around and then they saw Hanuman. So it struck Indra that maybe this person has consumed the sun or done something to the sun. So he went and challenged Hanuman, or at that point he's still known as Anjaneya. He challenged him, "What have you done with the sun? Have you extinguished the sun or done something to it like that?" In a very forceful way, he confronted Hanuman. And Hanuman was quite taken aback. And Hanuman could tell this person, he's thinking of attacking me actually. So he became very defensive. So he immediately jumped onto Airavata, the elephant, huge celestial elephant. He jumped on top of Airavata and was just about to put him also into his mouth. Perhaps he hadn't learnt about vegetarianism. Then Indra hurled his thunderbolt weapon at Hanuman. And that thunderbolt weapon hits Hanuman in the mouth, or in the region of the mouth, and actually hurt his jaw very badly. In fact, he more or less fractured his jaw like that. In fact, that's where the name Hanuman comes from. Hanuman literally means he whose teeth are broken or whose jaw is fractured. That's where the name comes from. So, Hanuman, though, he wasn't terribly deterred by this. Hanuman grabbed the thunderbolt weapon and put it in his mouth, along with the sun and Rahu. So now the sun, Rahu, and Indra's undefeatable thunderbolt weapon, they're all inside Hanuman's mouth. But Hanuman's mouth is aching. It's hurting quite badly, actually. And Hanuman's getting very angry and very upset. And Indra can see this. And Indra thought that, I've never met anyone who could just swallow my thunderbolt weapon. And even when he's struck by it, he's hardly affected. So Indra thought, maybe he's a Vishnu avatar. And I've offended him now. He's probably going to kill me right now. So Indra thought, I better get out of here right now. So Indra just ran. He just fled. So there was Hanuman. In his mouth was the sun, Rahu, and Indra's thunderbolt weapon. And Hanuman thought, and his jaw was aching. And Hanuman thought, well, after all that, I'm going home right now. Then I'm going to eat everything that I have in my mouth. So he set off to Kishkinda. So Lord Indra fled back, and he met with all his demigod associates. And he asked them, what will we do? We got to do something. So then they decided, right, let's go and appeal to Lord Brahma. So they went to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma said, yes, I'm sure we can do something about this, because I think that this may actually be Hanuman, the eternal associate of Lord Ram. This may actually be him. So we're very fortunate. So what we should do, we should go to this monkey, and we should all throw ourselves at his feet, touch his feet, and beg him for forgiveness. And particularly beg him, please give the sun back, because we can't go on with the universe in complete darkness. So all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma, they all went, and they met Hanuman as he was returning home to Kishkinda. And they all threw themselves at his feet, and they begged him, oh, you great soul, within your mouth you have the sun. So please, won't you give it back to us? And Hanuman, he was looking at them. Then he saw Indra. And he said to them, wait a minute. This is the fellow who just attacked me and just hurt my jaw. So I'm not going to cooperate with you people. So he refused. No, I'm not going to give you the sun back. You go away. So then Brahma was thinking, what do we do? Then he thought, I know, we'll offer him benedictions. He's just a little baby monkey. So if we offer him all sorts of nice material things, then he'll become cooperative and he'll give the sun back. So he told, Lord Brahma told Hanuman that, you know, if you like, I can give you the benediction that you will live as long as I do. Would you like that? And Hanuman said, oh yes, that's nice. So Lord Brahma said, all right, so be it. That benediction is now yours. So would you give the sun back now? Hanuman said, no, I'm not giving the sun back. Then Vayu came. No, he wouldn't give the sun back. So then Lord Brahma was getting into anxiety. He was getting into great anxiety. He realized this is actually an expansion of Lord Shiva. So we can't overpower him. Actually, he's more powerful than us. So, what are we going to do? So then Lord Brahma had a very good idea. He thought, I'm going to read his mind. And I'll find out what he really wants. Then I'll offer him that. Then maybe he'll give back the sun. So then Lord Brahma went into meditation. And he started to read Hanuman's mind. And do you know what Hanuman wanted? Fruit. He was thinking that my mother told me I should eat fruit. And I've been going through so much trouble, and I want to eat some fruit. So then Lord Brahma told, or he actually told Brihaspati to tell Hanuman, that I give you the benediction. You can have any fruit you like. In fact, you can have any plant you like, anything. And not only can you have it, but I'll give you the knowledge that you'll know exactly what benefit will come if you eat this fruit or take some of this plant or how they'll affect you. So you'll become a connoisseur, a real connoisseur of all types of vegetarian foodstuff. So Hanuman was thinking, oh, really? Wow, that's very nice. His interest was finally being aroused. Then Dhanvantari came up to him. He's actually an expansion of Vishnu, like a partial expansion. And he said that on top of that, I'll give you the knowledge whereby you will know all the medicinal effects of all the plants that have medicinal effects. So Hanuman, somehow he was attracted to that idea also. So Hanuman was so happy. Then Lord Brahma said, so will you give us the sun back now? And Hanuman said, all right. I was going to eat it because I thought it was going to be like a fruit, but now I can get all these fruits that I want, so I don't need the sun any longer. So you can have the sun back and I'll keep my fruit. So in this way the sun was rescued. Or the universe was rescued. So Hanuman, he's a very special person, very powerful, as an expansion of Shiva. Not exactly, of course, powerful on the same level as Vishnu, but very, very powerful. Partially, like part of the power of Vishnu, power of Lord Shiva. Hanuman, when he was a little boy, baby, or like growing up a bit, monkey, he was very mischievous. There are many stories, maybe we'll tell you more tomorrow night. There are many stories about Hanuman's mischief. One nice story is when Narada Muni came. Narada Muni was walking through, passing through Kishkinda. And Hanuman, he was actually very cheeky. Hanuman confronted Narada Muni and was sort of jumping this way and that in front of Narada. Narada was trying to go around him, but Hanuman wouldn't let him go past. So Narada said, you know, I'm Narada Muni. You shouldn't do like this. But Hanuman said, well, that you may think like that, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm having fun. So I'm not going to let you go past. So Narada eventually realized that I'm not going to get past. So he asked Hanuman, what do you want? What do you want? I'll give you something, but you just let me go past. So Hanuman said, I want a benediction from you. And Narada said, well, I've heard of you, and I know you've already got all benedictions. And then Hanuman said, actually, no, there's one benediction I haven't got, and I want that, and I want it from you. That benediction is, I want to become a great musician and a great singer. So Narada said, well, all right, if that's what it takes to get you to allow me to pass you, you can have that benediction. And Hanuman said, okay, thank you. So Narada then went to walk past him. But Hanuman jumped in his way again and wouldn't let him pass again.
So Narada asked him, what now? I just gave you your benediction. Hanuman said, no, I want even more. I want you to give me the benediction that I'll be an even better musician and singer than you. So Narada said, oh, all right, that's what you want. So then he was trying to get past Hanuman again, and Hanuman jumped in front of him again and wouldn't let him pass again. So Narada was getting actually a little angry, a little disturbed. So he said, well, what do you want now? So Hanuman told him that I want a certificate from you. I want you to certify that I'm the best singer and the best musician. And in order to do this, I want you to sit down and listen to me play music and sing. And then you can give me your certificate. So Narada said, all right, all right. So he sat down and he placed his veena on one rock that was there. And he sat down and Hanuman started to sing. And certainly, sure enough, Hanuman sang so beautifully, just indescribable, actually transcendental, perfect transcendental singing. And Narada was becoming completely enraptured by the singing. He was becoming deeply absorbed in it. So beautiful. And Narada really was he closed his eyes, he was swaying back and forward, just relishing this beautiful singing. Of course, he was singing about Lord Ram. Such beautiful singing. And Narada didn't notice it because he had his eyes closed. But the singing was so beautiful that all the rocks in that area started to melt and turn into liquid, including the rock that his veena was standing on. So his veena sort of submerged into this rock. It submerged into this body of liquid which had been the rock. So Hanuman finished singing, and Narada was just in such ecstasy that his eyes were still closed, and the song was just going through his head again and again, and he was just stunned, motionless. So Hanuman said to him that I want to stop now. So, will you please open your eyes? So Narada opened his eyes. Hanuman stopped. But when Hanuman stopped, all those rocks that had turned to liquid, they turned back into rocks again. But his veena had become submerged in that liquid rock. So now it was caught in the rock. So Narada said, all right, Hanuman said, well, you can go now. Narada said, all right, I'll go. And he picked up his veena, but he couldn't pick it up because it was merged in this heavy boulder. So Narada said to Hanuman, oh, you've got to do something about this. Will you sing again so that I can get my veena back? And Hanuman said, no. No, I won't. I don't feel like it. I'm going home. Narada was calling out, please, stop. Come back and sing so I can get my veena out. I've got to go on. But Hanuman just said, no, I don't want to. I'm not coming back. I'm going home. So Narada was following behind Hanuman, pleading with him, please, I can't go on without my veena. And I have to go on. It's my duty. I can't avoid it. So please, you've got to come back and sing again. Hanuman wouldn't budge. He wouldn't agree at all. So he was living there. He was, of course, living as the prince, the son of the king of the celestial monkeys. So they're living in a palace. So Hanuman walked into the palace with Narada following behind. Then he walked into one room and sat down. Narada came in, begging him. He said, "Oh, not you again, Hanuman." And he got up and he moved to the next room. And Narada followed him. In this way they went all around the whole palace, everywhere, from room to room to room to room, till finally they came to the entranceway again. And Anjana, the, you could say, direct or immediate mother of Hanuman, saw that Narada was there, and that Narada was very disturbed. In fact, Narada appealed to the mother, "Please tell your son, he's got to cooperate and sing again so I can get my veena out." So Anjana told Hanuman, "Oh, you're up to your mischief again, you rascal. Why are you tormenting this Narada? He's a great saint, and you're committing offenses. You've made him walk all around the palace, everywhere, all over the palace. How could you do this?" Then Hanuman said, "Actually, the reason I did that was that I wanted the dust from his lotus feet to be throughout our whole palace, so that whatever room I'm in, I can take the dust from his feet. So that's why I did this." So then he went back out and he sang, and Narada got his veena back, and Narada carried on. And such are the pastimes of Hanuman. Anyway, there's so many more, and I guess tomorrow night we'll tell you some more. In the meantime, anyway, just one other thing I'll mention though. That Hanuman, even though he's so great, he's so powerful, so extraordinary, as soon as he met Ram, of course he's never really separate, but at least, you know, they're eternal associates, but at least in the context of their appearance some millions of years ago. Rupa Goswami, I was reading yesterday, Rupa Goswami says that Lord Ram appeared in the 24th cycle of the four yugas in the life of this Manu. We're now in the 28th cycle. So that means four cycles before. That means 17 million years before Hanuman appeared. Or a little more, probably about 18 million, something like that. Lord Ram appeared and Hanuman appeared with him. Actually, they're eternal associates. But when Hanuman finally met Ram in the course of this particular appearance of Ram, even though Hanuman is so powerful, practically just like Lord Shiva, but he immediately surrendered to Lord Ram. And from that point on, he would never be separate from Lord Ram. And he would never accept any position other than the position of servant before Ram, even though he was so powerful. There's one very nice verse, Rupa Goswami quotes it in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in which Hanuman says to Lord Ram that, "I will not accept any position, artha, karma, yoga, any position of sense gratification, power, mystic capabilities, yogic powers. I won't accept any position like that if I have to lose my position as your servant. Bhavan Prabhur Aham Dasa." It's a very nice verse from Ramayana. That you are my master and I'm your servant. That is our position eternally. So I won't accept any other position. If I lose my relationship with you as servant. So Hanuman relishes his position as the servant of Ram. Humble servant. Simply serving at the lotus feet of Lord Ram. Even though he's so powerful, sometimes because Shiva is like a partial form or a a transformation, you could say. He's like a transformation of Vishnu, and Hanuman is an expansion of him. So sometimes Hanuman manifests like a version of the universal form. So a version of it. It's like a partial and transformed form of the universal form, which is exhibited by Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because Hanuman is like a partial expansion of a transformation of Vishnu, so he can do things like this. He's so powerful. But he would rather be the humble servant. Not only rather, but he will not accept any other position. Only the position of servant, of Lord Ram. No other position. He won't be happy. So he stays there. And we should recognize that. I know Hanuman's a very popular deity here in South Africa, particularly, and in India also. But here, Hanuman, there's a sense of worshipping Hanuman without exactly, you know, really making it clear what his position is. That he is the humble servant of Lord Ram. He's taken to be a little bit like an independent deity, isn't it? Something like that. Something like that. But that is not satisfying to Hanuman. By worshipping Hanuman, one is obviously trying to get the favor and the blessings of Hanuman for some reason, whatever reason one may want to approach him for. But if you really want to please him, and then through pleasing him get his mercy, then don't worship him separate from Ram. Don't. Actually, you'll take it as a little bit like an offense. Because he feels that Ram, he's the Lord. Ram is the Lord. And who am I? I'm just his servant. I'm just his order carrier. Whatever he says, I immediately must do. So he's the one. He's the one who should be worshipped. This is the natural feeling for a devotee. For any devotee, just like Srimati Radharani or Lakshmi Devi, people are fond of worshipping Lakshmi in order to get money, and they worship her independent of Narayan. But, at least according to the Vedic concept, a proper Vedic wife will never allow herself to be approached independent of her husband. She can only be approached via the husband or while in the association of the husband. So therefore, if one wants the mercy of Lakshmi, one should worship Lakshmi Narayan, or ideally actually Radha Krishna, because Lakshmi Narayan is just like their expansions of Radha and Krishna. And whatever is available, whatever mercy is available from Lakshmi Narayan, is available from Radha and Krishna, and more, and a lot more actually. So, particularly in regard to Hanuman, we should know that Hanuman, if we want to please him and get his mercy, get his blessings, then we should worship him as the servant of Ram. So tomorrow night we're going to try and do that. It's the first time we're doing it here in our temple. In our temples in India, they celebrate some of these festivals of great personalities like Shivaratri. They celebrate worshipping Shiva as a devotee, as a Vaishnava. So we'll try and do that tomorrow night. And we hope you'll all come. I assume there'll be prasad offered to everyone, and then kirtan, and then we'll hear a little bit more, some more pastimes of Hanuman with Lord Ram. So now we'll answer a few of our questions here. Why do Hindus get trance on these special days? Why isn't trance mentioned in the Vedas? Ah, so this person is saying that trance is not bona fide. Yes, well, I guess if it doesn't mention trance in the Vedas, then it's not bona fide. We've seen it, actually. I've seen it a few times. Quite an extraordinary experience. One of our devotees sort of ventured the opinion, you could say, that maybe it's ghosts. Ghosts are looking for people to possess so they can enjoy through those people's bodies. That's why some people, they develop split personality. One time they're just normal, then next time they're another person, because they are, because a ghost has taken them over. So at least manifestly they're the other person, the ghost is manifesting through their bodies, and the actual person who the body belongs to is being suppressed. So similarly, the ghosts are there, and they know that when people do these different pujas and things, they want to get trance, they want to start acting like another person. So the ghost knows that if I make this person act like Hanuman or Kali or whoever it may be, then not only will this person not feel scared that, oh, I'm being taken over by another being. They won't, normally people would be scared if they're being taken over, possessed by a ghost. But in this situation, when the person wants to have this, not only will the person not be frightened and not resist, but they'll welcome me. They'll welcome me, the ghost is thinking. Anyway, this is one idea suggested, and I think it's quite a good idea, actually. So let's see now, next question. It's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, it's better to perform your own duty, even imperfectly, than to do another person's duty perfectly. But we see in the modern age, people are not acting according to the Vedic system of duties, Varnashram Dharma. We see Sudras behaving as Brahmins and vice versa. So how do we know what our duty is in this confused age? Actually, that's a very good question. In fact, that's a very exceptionally good question. You have to know what is your duty, otherwise, you know, in your confused or ignorant state, you may do some wrong duty and then you won't be successful in life. So you must do the right duty. But how do you know? Arjuna knew. He was brought up in it. It was so clear. But now we're not brought up in it. It's not clear. So what we need, what is recommended actually, is that one takes shelter, ultimately that one takes shelter of a spiritual master, and takes shelter also of the senior devotees. Then the spiritual master and the senior devotees, generally they're quite accustomed to evaluating individuals and seeing what sort of duty is suitable for this person, and then engaging that person nicely in that type of duty. Their experience, that's one of their main duties. So if you want to know what your duty is, then take shelter of the senior devotees, take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, and then they'll, after evaluating for some time, they'll be able to engage you in duties which are really suited to you. And then you'll be able to advance very nicely. Why did Krishna and Ram appear in India and not in the West? Or in South Africa, for that matter? Or in Chatsworth, Kenya? Well, they did. They did. Of course, India is the main place, Bharat Varsh, because that is the center of the universe. That is the center of the universe, and where all the important things that go on in the universe, at least in regard to avatars, they mainly go on. Therefore it's stated in the Bhagavatam that the demigods glorify the inhabitants of Bharat Varsh. The demigods feel that they are so fortunate, because in Bharat Varsh, the opportunity is there because it's so dear to Krishna and Ram. that the opportunity is there to go back to Godhead just after living a short life, 70 or 80 years, and you can go back to Godhead. Whereas as a demigod, you have to live for millions of years, and it's very hard. But actually, there are avatars of the Lord have appeared here in South Africa, even here in Chatsworth. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita it said that when they appear, they leave deity forms of themselves behind. So therefore Prabhupada says that we can expect that in the future, devotees will find deities around on all the continents of these particular forms of the Lord which have appeared on these different continents. Eclipse, scientific, scriptural, please explain. Well, I think we just explained. Rahu. Rahu is a planet, but Rahu is a person. In fact, he exists only in the form of his head. And he has a particular sort of fetish. He wants to eat the moon. And sometimes he wants to eat the sun. So when he tries, that's called an eclipse. What is the difference between Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga? Well, the basic difference is that in Karma Yoga, you do whatever is your duty according to your bodily nature. You do that and give the result to Krishna. But in Bhakti Yoga, you will do anything, whatever Krishna wants. Even if it's not your duty, but if Krishna tells you that he wants it, then you'll do it. Whereas in Karma Yoga, you'll only do that which is your duty according to your bodily nature. Most Hindus worship Hanuman and raise a flag in glorification of him. Is this necessary, knowing that he's a devotee of the Lord? Well, of course, there's nothing wrong with raising a flag with a picture of Hanuman on it. Can't be bad. But I think many of the philosophical ideas behind the practice are not correct. So better to follow the proper standard Vaishnav system. Why did Lord Ram, the Supreme Lord, experience feelings of anguish, torment, and revenge at his separation from Sita Devi? Well, the reason is that the pure devotees of the Lord are so dear to the Lord that if he gets separated from them, he feels great pain and he feels that he must get their association back again. That's why Lord Ram was feeling like that. And if someone steals their devotee away, steals the Lord's devotee away, then the Lord feels very angry at the person who stole the devotee. And that's why he felt as he did towards Ravana, because he's a person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So those are our questions. Now we'll just make one announcement. Hare Krishna. Everyone is invited to two Krishna Katas, which will be held firstly on April 31st, I think. 30th, sorry, April 30th, which is coming up soon, at Unit 9 Community Hall at 4 in the afternoon. So make a note of that, April 30th. Unit 9, Community Hall, 4 in the afternoon. Krishna Katha will be conducted by His Grace, Prabhu Vishnu Das. And secondly, ML Sultan Technicon at 2 o'clock, I guess on the same day. And we would like to invite you to our Hanuman Jayanti program tomorrow evening, 6 p.m., here in the temple. We'll begin with prasad.